ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
It is a truth universally acknowledged that on one's 250th birthday, there should be a celebration. I'm Claire Nichols, and on The Book Show, we're raising our teacups to Jane Austen.
Why Austen? What is it about her?
Authors Colm Tobin, Karen Joy Fowler, and more will explore why, in 2025, the Austen effect is bigger than ever.
That's quite incredible.
Search for The Book Show and look for Dear Jane wherever you get your podcasts, or hear it now on the ABC Listen app.
I have pet frogs.
You have pet frogs?
Two pet frogs.
Really? Do they have names?
Yeah. Cutie and Flowery. African Bullfrog.
Wow.
I feed them fish food.
That's Lyra. She's a 6-year-old from Ontario in Canada.
Yeah, they have a secret hiding spot. It's at the back of the pond, but we know our way to the back of the pond.
We both like frogs. And we're online friends. And this is how we met. Okay, I'm just going to check the What the Duck inbox. What the Duck at abc.net.au. Password. Amphibian ambidextrous amplexus 11. Okay, I got mail. Hello, I've got a really strange request. My 6-year-old Lyra is a huge fan of Dr. Anne Jones and all of her videos about nature and science. Aww. We've tried really hard to foster our daughter's interest
in science and nature, knowing that this is a great opportunity to increase our appreciation for our planet. However, having just started school, Lyra is learning that being a girl who loves science is not an interest she shares with her peers. She's recently been saying things like, "Oh, girls shouldn't like catching frogs," or "Catching bugs is only for boys." And it really breaks my heart to see her give up something that she loves simply because her friends don't share the interest.
Oh, now this is a true What the Duck moment. Why, in this day and age, would a young girl be shamed for an interest in the natural world? I'm Dr. Anne Jones, and you're listening to What the Duck on ABC Radio National. Julie Gould is Lyra's mum, and we set up a video call so that I could meet Lyra for myself.
So Lyra is 6. She just turned 6 in February, and she is our nature lover. She loves spiders, all things creepy crawly, frogs, lizards, newts, fish, birds, anything and everything. If she can get her hands on it, she wants it.
Julie is from Northern Ontario, about 4 hours north of Toronto. They live near a forest that is 1,000 kilometres long and covers the whole top of Canada. Honestly, it sounds like real life Frozen.
So we're part of the Boreal Forest. It's beautiful, absolutely gorgeous. Every season has its own beauty. Right now we have snow on all the trees and it was recently ice storming, so everything looks like it's covered in glass and it kind of shines and sparkles. And in the summer, it's very green and lush. And we found a shamrock spider this past summer, which was beautiful but terrifying because I've never seen one. I didn't know that we had any in Northern Ontario. They have beautiful yellow coloring on their body and then black and white stripes like a zebra. And it was in our tomatoes. I didn't realize what was this. And she went to try and pick it up. And she's been picking them up since she was 11 months old. I can't get her to stop. So
this started like really early.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like she was just crawling, not even one. I stepped into the other room and I come back and she's holding something and just giggling up a storm. I'm like, what in the world have you found? And she had a wolf spider just crawling all over her, and she thought it was hilarious. And of course, I freak out.
As you do.
Put it down! What are you doing? But she picks them up like crazy. She gets spider bites probably 10 a year, and she's like, whatever. I want to pick them up. So, okay.
Well, I think she's a very cool kid.
Yeah.
So.
We're a little biased, you know?
She sounds amazing, and I love making new friends. So here we go. Hi, Lyra. It's nice to meet you. My name's Anne. So you tell me, what sort of things do you like when you're out for a walk?
Frogs.
Frogs? Do any frogs live close to your house?
Yeah, in my pond. Lots of them. Lots of frogs. In the summer, I like to catch frogs.
You like to catch them? How do you catch them? Tell me your secrets.
We use a bucket.
Ah.
And we put the bucket into water and try to scoop up a frog.
Wow. And what other things do you see at the pond?
The pond's frozen now, so sometimes the coyotes have a fight with the ice.
No way. They fight with the ice?
Yeah.
What do you think they're doing?
They're like scratching the ice.
Oh.
I think they're just trying to get across.
Oh.
But it's just slippery.
They're like they got ice skates on there. And are they scary?
No.
And do you have friends that also like frogs and creepy crawlies and things?
No.
So Lyra is a sweet kid. She loves frogs. She isn't scared of coyotes. So why is it that she suddenly picked up this idea that girls don't do science? I had really hoped we were beyond this.
When she started school, she would start coming home and say, oh, so-and-so says that frogs are for boys, or, oh, so-and-so doesn't like that I like worms. But seeing her give it up, but to have her say, oh, I don't want to go do that. I don't want to go look for fish. I don't want to look for bugs. And I see that change since she started school. And you can't help think that it's coming from her peers, because I've spoken to her teacher and I know her teacher is really trying, even just being able to reach out to people in the science community and say, hey, I'm a mom in Canada that has very limited people that I know anything about this. How do I help this 6-year-old?
Well, getting in touch with scientists, that is something that I can actually help you with. So let me make a few calls.
Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Jodie Rowley is an amazing scientist. And Lyra, you're going to love this. She's an amphibian biologist. She's all about the frogs.
Like, I'm really obsessed with frogs. They're my thing. I guess we can't do everything, so I really narrowed down on these precious little animals that were in a lot of trouble and also just had really cool eyeballs and toe pads and all the things that sort of drew me to them in the first place, which wasn't how threatened they were, it was how awesome they are.
What were you like when you were a little kid?
I wasn't particularly adventurous, I don't think. Well, I grew up mostly in the city. I'm not the person you would think would be climbing up mountains in search of frogs. I am uncoordinated. I used to climb up trees and get stuck. I never really went out at night looking for anything. And then all of a sudden, like, my mum probably wanted me to be a ballerina, which I also kind of failed at because of my uncoordination. that, you know, that I would be all of a sudden climbing up mountains in... I'm a very unlikely person. You know, I'm allergic to bees and ants and wasps and they bite me all the time. You know, I'm not a natural person to be out in the field doing this kind of stuff.
I'm guessing you didn't say that in the job interview for the Australian Museum. Look, let's be honest. I'm a bit of a klutz.
Yeah, that doesn't go on the risk assessment form. Since then, though, you know, I got the experience. But that's the only way that you're going to, you know, they don't teach you this at school. They don't teach you how to look for frogs. They don't teach you how to climb a mountain and how to hang out with your colleagues, make camp, all that kind of stuff. And it's just with experience. And so anyone, even the most unlikely person that grew up in a city and wasn't connected to frogs, can end up, you know, on a remote mountain finding, you know, new species to science with a bunch of amazing colleagues.
Remember that description that Julie gave of the beautiful shamrock spider? Sounded wonderful, and I have a healthy respect for arachnids. Truth is, though, I'm not really a spider person, but I know lots of women who are.
My name is Maydeanne Andrade. I'm a professor of biological sciences at the University of Toronto Scarborough, and I study black widow spiders and their relatives.
Black widow spiders. In Australia, the time that you hear about black widows is sort of like in fairy tales and things like that. They seem like me to one of those magical creatures. But Professor Andrade has about 1,500 of them in her lab. And to be truthful, I think I meant mythical rather than magical, but let's roll with it.
Well, I think they're magical. And of course, you being in Australia, the relative of the black widow that I actually started my career with is the redback. They are also magic. But I spent a couple of years in Perth, actually, working on redback spiders as my PhD.
What's the sort of thing that you try and find out about those spiders you've got in your lab?
So we're really interested in behavior, related to mating in particular, which is one of the reasons why black widows become so interesting, because males of some of those species mate only once, which is very unusual. And they also have cannibalism. So females killing males who come along and try to court them or after they've mated.
It actually demonstrates the key role. It's curiosity, right, about the natural world in your case, is the linchpin to this scientific endeavor, because it started with the curious question of, like, what the duck is going on there, you know?
Exactly, what the duck. And I think that's the piece that a lot of students, a lot of people thinking about science don't understand. They think it's, they get a textbook and it's so static. And they just see that you have to memorize facts. You know, emphasizing for them, no, it's creative, it's curiosity driven.
When Madian was a young girl, her parents initially wanted her to be a medical doctor. You know, parents love that sort of thing.
They do. And then one day I came home and said, I think I want to study bugs instead.
Become the bug doctor.
Exactly. They call me the spider woman.
Oh, I see. That's good, though. That's good. That's still a superhero.
It is a superhero.
So we have the Canadian spider woman, Dr. Andrade. And in Australia, we have our own spider woman, Dr. Amber Beavis. She works in science policy now, but spiders is where it all began for her.
A fascination for spiders is something that doesn't ever go away. My career has taken so many twists and turns that I gravitated to natural history. That took me into the world of spiders and working on social huntsman spiders and the Sydney funnelweb spider. And that's how I started off my career as an academic, as a geneticist and as a spider scientist.
Amber loved spiders when she was a kid. And then when she grew up, she became a spider scientist. And she also grew up watching her mother work as a geologist.
So growing up with a female role model in a traditionally male field meant that I wasn't exposed to as many of the negative messages that girls sometimes get about going into science. But that being said, I definitely experienced my fair share of glass ceilings when I was in academia and research. I experienced academic theft when I was working in that sector. But, you know, something that I think is more tangible was the time when I was quite young and just getting started in the field. I was a little bit of a goth when I was in my 20s. I had bright pink hair and I wore a tartan kilt and Doc Martens. You know, it was the 90s. I was told I was too neat to be a scientist by an older male academic. And from that point on, I had to overcome how I looked to be given any opportunities at all. I'll admit I was determined not to let that get me down. So I doubled down and I took to wearing high heels in the lab with my lab coat, and I wore pinstripe pants into the field, and I just didn't compromise on this very small but kind of very important thing to me. You need to be yourself. And if folks aren't comfortable with that, it says more about them than it does you.
Funny how Amber was supported in her love of scientist as a kid. But it was when she was an adult that the misogyny came through. There are still serious barriers, like safety in the field when you're in the outdoors. Here's Professor Andrade.
Here you inevitably segue into the challenge of personal safety, and that's true for girls more than boys, and it's true for girls and women of color more than it is for people who are not people of color. And so there's the two pieces. There's just being a woman and not necessarily wanting to be out at night. Like, people often say to me, I did my field research on redback spiders, which are neurotoxic, and I worked by myself. They're nocturnal as well. They were overnight. So I work overnight by myself on poisonous spiders. And people would say, weren't you terrified? And I said, you know, no, to be honest, I rode my bike to and from the field site, and I was scared of humans. I was scared of humans. So if people drove by, I would hide in the bushes. And I just thought that is actually a really sad statement, that I was in this population of like 100 neurotoxic spiders. And what I was afraid of was the people who might not expect to see me in the field. Yeah.
Jodie Rowley found there were cultural factors when it came to gender expectations when she was working overseas.
Particularly working in Vietnam, for example, I had a lot of female students and it was sort of not what you did. You didn't go out at night into the forest as a female. That was not your place. So I've had comments that, you know, it was really great that you're a female and you're doing this and that means that I can do it too. And so it was really fortunate to be able to, I guess, prove to some amazing female conservation biologists, frog biologists that, yeah, no, it is something that you can do as a female. But yeah, I guess there is a lot of, I guess, traditional in every culture sort of what men and women can do and can't do. And I guess climbing mountains looking for frogs at night is not always something that is encouraged.
For Professor Madian Andrade, it's also about race. She's involved in advocating for diversity and equality within academia and science.
My husband is actually also a scientist, and he's white and a man. He would say, they said, what? Or you experienced what? I've never, like, no, that should not be happening. And I slowly started realizing that my experience was radically different from the dominant demographic, the people who you usually see as a scientist at the front of the room. And, you know, some of it sounds like relatively small things, but when it's constant, it does start to build up. So what I found was the hardest, and which I would point young women to being careful about, is that it can erode your self-esteem and your confidence, because it often involves questioning you much more than someone else would be questioned, questioning your ideas, and not in a good scientific rigorous way, but in just a I don't respect your intellect way. And so you just need to be robust to that, you know, and sadly, that's what I recommend to people.
God, this is getting depressing, right? No one that I called up to chat about their experiences from childhood to professional women seemed like they got through all the stages without some version of what those kids told Lyra, that nature or science was not a place for her. Professor Andrade says one way to combat this is to have great friends, to have allies and partners who will build you up and encourage and support you. Because it seems like, unfortunately and fortunately, you're not alone.
There actually are a lot of women and people of colour in science. We are a much smaller number and we're more sort of diffuse and we're often the only one in the department or whatever, but we're here. What I'm advocating for is, in addition to what people think about in these broad categories, so women, people of colour, black people in my case, I just want everyone to have the opportunity to do things they're passionate about. We select for a certain type of person, right? Someone who can withstand the traditional way of sort of almost hazing people to get them to where we are today, right? And so what I love is that I now think we have more people who are aware of that is a hazing, that is not necessary for good science. You can be a sensitive person who doesn't necessarily like speaking in front of the room and provide great science, right? So I love that. There are groups of people who have historically been marginalized, and the stereotypes that attach themselves to these people, like me, black people, are about low intellect, are about lack of ability, especially in things like science, where people tend to think you just have to be naturally brilliant. So I've been working to sort of make sure that those of us who are here are visible. There's lots of us here. We're doing everything from astrophysics to biology to applied mathematics. So we're here. And that role modeling, I think, is important for young people. It's important for black children to see that, yeah, there are black people doing this. So there's no reason why I can't do it.
And this sort of bias absolutely exists in Australia also. Tanya Laddy is an entomologist in Sydney, an insect person, and she is seriously one of the coolest women I have ever interviewed, right? She's unflappable and charismatic, and I was talking to her once about slime molds, and she pointed to the drawer in her office and was like, oh yeah, I used to keep one as a pet in there. I bought it off the internet. She also knows firsthand about the challenges of racism in science.
I think there's certain things you do when you're a non-white biologist in the field that maybe other folks don't think about. Like, I always try to look very much like I'm doing something professional. Like, I like to have a clipboard. I like to have, you know, a shirt that has a big insect on it and just like really play up the nerdiness so that it's very obvious that I'm not doing anything illegal, because I'm very much aware that that's something that can happen, that people will see you creeping around and just make assumptions about what you're actually doing there. And I don't want to have that happen. And I think there's also things people don't think about with travel, for example, that even I didn't think about until I was traveling with a student from another country. We were going to Cambodia, and every time we got to a border, she got stopped and pulled aside and really bothered because she didn't have an Australian passport or a Canadian passport. Yeah, I think there are a lot of barriers to people in science that get overlooked. They're all different challenges, but they're all there. And instead of pretending that they're not there doesn't really help anyone, I think.
Yep, we've all got to be real about where these barriers are, or we'll never be able to bring them down. And on top of that, we've got to have a vision for what we want environmental, nature-based sciences to be like in the future. Professor Madian Andrade.
If you walk the sidewalks of whatever place you're in, the distribution of people you see on the sidewalk is the same as the distribution of people you see teaching classes, engaging in the classes, writing the textbooks, doing the experiments that end up in the textbooks, or inventing CRISPR. We have Nobel Prize winning women who invented CRISPR, right? Which is great. It's slow, though. It's slow, slow, slow.
Now, Lyra, are you still there? Because I know it's a bit hard for a six-year-old to sit still, so you may well be back playing with your frogs Cutie and Flowery, but these amazing people do have some messages just for you and little kids like you. Here's Jody Rowley, the frog lady, who's allergic to a lot of things in the bush, but loves it anyway. What would you say to Lyra?
You're not alone. If you're interested in something, keep exploring. For me, it's frogs. For you, it might be frogs too. It might be something else, but the passion that you have as a kid for something, keep it. We need more people with passion and with care. Don't feel alone because you're not, and don't stop what you love because that's what will give you power into the future, especially as you grow up. You'll find your people and you'll find your place. The world will be better off for it, as you will too.
What about Tanya? How does she hope the future looks for Lyra?
I hope that she grows up in a world that doesn't make assumptions about who she is. I would have hoped we'd move past that by now, you know, that we'd kind of realize that people are who they are. We all love the things we love, and that's not something that should be surprising or strange, or certainly not something we should look down on. And at the same time, because I'm also a realist, I hope that she learns that she shouldn't care what other people say. I'd like her to be able to go forward and just be who she is and love her tadpoles and love her insects and not worry what the rest of the world thinks about that.
Whereas for Amber Beavis, Lyra's story brought about some sadness.
It just made me incredibly sad and incredibly outraged on her behalf. And I think what it comes down to, if you're interested in bugs and creepy crawlies, if you have that talent for observation, then just get to it, pursue it, enjoy it, ask questions, be curious.
Hi, Lyra. I'm Jess, and I'm a herpetologist.
Hi, Lyra. My name's Perry Beasley.
My name is Juanita Rodriguez.
My name's Josie.
My name is Federica.
Hi, Lyra.
I'm from Italy.
My name's Tanya, and I'm an insect scientist.
Hi, Lyra. My name is Ying, and I'm a scientist who studies leaf mining.
Insects are really amazing animals that can do some amazing things to help keep our Earth healthy.
So I wanted to let you know that you are not alone.
You're not alone, Lyra.
You're not alone.
I love bugs too. You're not alone.
So see, Lyra, you're not alone. Lots of people love insects too.
I also love snakes, geckos, lizards, bats, and other creepy crawlies that girls aren't supposed to like.
And so, Julie and Lyra, you've just been hearing these messages from scientists around the world. What do you think?
That's just amazing. This is something that she does truly love, and she decides, oh, I want to go to school to be an arachnologist or, you know, study birds or whatever. We're going to do what we can to make sure that that happens. And knowing that there's people out there willing to encourage her is amazing. So thank you. Thank you so much.
You know, of course this program is about Lyra, obviously. Her mum emailed me. She gets to see porcupines in the forest near Ontario, and I'm jealous. But really, this program is about all kids with passions and adults who used to be those passionate kids. It isn't really just about women either. It's about females and males and gender-diverse people, non-conforming people of all sorts. The benefits from absolutely diving into your passions will not only make you happier and healthier as a human, it'll make us all happier and healthier as a society. So, If you know a kid like Lyra who needs encouragement, then keep an eye out for videos from these scientists and many others on ABC social media and ABC online. And maybe you could share this podcast as well, because sometimes we all need a little hype up to have the confidence to absolutely kick butt. On ABC Radio National, this is What the Duck, and I'm Dr. Anne Jones.
Last week I had to explain they don't make Anne Jones action figures. Like, I'm sorry, I can't get her a doll.
And then it's the
questions of, oh, mummy, why don't they make scientist action figures?
Patria Ladgrove produced this program with help from Joel Werner, and it was produced on the lands of the Kaurna, Wadawurrung and Gadigal people.
Wait, bye-bye. Anne's going to go. It's her morning time. She's got to go. You did so good, sweetie, talking about your frogs.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.